This is the Best of the Adam Gold Show podcast, part of the Capital Broadcasting Podcast Network. Enjoy the best of today's show. Here's Adam Gold.
I think maybe today is the official start of like silly sports season where we don't really have many games to talk about. Basketball's over. We're kind of still rehashing all of the same NFL topics and NFL draft topics and things like that for the 800th time as we wait for the draft to come up.
I was about to say, we're in mid-season form in that regard.
Yeah, I mean, and I know like this is every year, but the draft isn't till April 29th.
Yeah, still have 2 weeks.
Two or 3 weeks. And so all we are left to do all the time is just continue to break down all of these mock drafts and things of that nature. And that's what we're going to do today, Dennis, because we are unlike any other sports media outlet out there.
That's right.
That's what's happening in the sports world. Look, I mean, I know there's baseball season happening. By the way, the Cubs got a win last night. That's big.
Breaking news sounder on that one?
Got a walk-off home run last night, and their offense has been absolutely brutal.
I think I saw a stat recently where National League pitchers had a better batting average than the Cubs as a team.
Yeah, they do. They do. So I'm a little bit stoked about that. But, you know, daily baseball isn't a thing that we generally get into around here anyway.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I actually love this part of the year just because we start to get into the nitty-gritty for the NHL.
Mm-hmm.
We get into the NBA playoffs. We've got golf season starting. We've got MLB. But those are all things that don't move the needle as much as, you know, other things do. And so we are in the off season, so to speak, for all the things that generally move the needle for us. But that's okay. We will find things to talk about and to entertain you with today. We're going to do more NFL draft stuff with Ryan Wilson coming up here from CBSSports.com in just a little bit. Our friend Brendan Whitted is going to jump in and tell us what's going on in the NBA in a little while as well. Chip Patterson is here for his normal weekly hit on the show to talk all things college sports that are happening. There's a lot of like name, image, likeness, transfer portal, transfer policy stuff to get into with Chip Patterson. So he'll help us navigate those things. And we'll talk about North Carolina basketball and their current situation as they've had basically all of their big men defect in one way or another. And I do think Armando Bacot's going to be back. He's just kind of testing NBA waters. But still, they're kind of in an interesting situation with Hubert Davis taking over controls there as he also tries to put together a staff, and kind of in an unusual situation for them because they are a team with a name brand that is unlike other college basketball programs where they can basically pick and choose. And I know that, you know, they don't get every recruit, and they do have some competition with some of the other blue blood programs in the country, but they may find themselves in a place where they've got to look more to the transfer portal than they have in the past, and they're already doing that. And it's just kind of a weird feeling for North Carolina basketball. So I want to talk to Brendan Marks, who covers the team from The Athletic, in a little while as well. We got a couple of things we need to get to first, Dennis, so let's get out of the gate. First and foremost, to the Carolina Panthers NFL draft. And we have beaten this to death as well, and I understand that. But when we get sound nuggets and we get mock drafts that give us different ideas, we pounce and we talk about it. Like this morning when Keyshawn Johnson of KJZ talked about the Panthers draft and their quarterback situations. And part of what happens as well, and this is especially true for the Panthers this year, is that we got a trade when the Panthers threw picks to the New York Jets for Sam Darnold, and that kind of throws a wrench into what they do in the draft, at least to some people. I'm not sure it should have, because I think their needs were the same regardless of who is playing quarterback right now. But the question now is around whether or not the Panthers should draft another quarterback, even though they have Teddy Bridgewater under contract. They just traded for Sam Darnold. Do they have to draft a quarterback as an insurance policy if Sam Darnold doesn't work out? QB prospects for next year don't look great, although I would say let the season play out, and we're going to find a couple that we really love because they're quarterbacks. And the only problem there is if you were going to draft a quarterback this year, then why did you give up all the draft assets you gave up to get Sam Darnold this year when you could have used those to help build around whoever you draft at quarterback this year? Does that make sense?
Oh, it makes sense to me.
Right? Like, am I crazy here?
No.
You would think that if your plan was to draft a quarterback, that you would want as many draft picks as you could get to try to supplement that new player. Especially a rookie. I mean, we're talking about doing that with guys who have played in the league in Sam Darnold and Teddy Bridgewater. So you would especially want to do it if you were going to draft a quarterback. I figured that trading for Sam Darnold effectively eliminated the need to draft a quarterback in this class or in this draft. But, and I still believe that that's the case. Like, I don't believe the Panthers are going to draft a quarterback. I just don't see how you give up what you gave up to get Sam Darnold in here and go and draft a quarterback anyways when you could have been in the same place and drafted one and had the assets. But here's Keyshawn Johnson from ESPN Radio's Keyshawn, J. Will, and Zubin this morning discussing whether or not the Panthers should still draft a quarterback.
When you start to think about putting another young quarterback in a situation with another young quarterback, I'm looking over my shoulders. Now you got the Jalen Hurts, Carson Wentz situation. So I'm going to now give up those picks for Sam and then use the eighth pick on another quarterback. I don't see where that's productive for Sam Darnold or the Carolina Panthers. It's like you're kind of putting yourself and your organization in a bad situation opposed to getting something that you actually need versus something that you want.
See, I'm not even worried about Sam Darnold having to look over his shoulder. Sam Darnold should probably already be looking over his shoulder.
Yeah.
Like, it's not like he was brought in here as the future for the next decade. Nah, man, this is a trial and error situation with Sam. Like, if it doesn't work out with him, then the Panthers can get rid of him in 2 years. They're going to give him, they're going to pick up his option, and they should. And I'll tell you why. But you have to hope that Sam Darnold is good. And you also have to pick up his option. Number one, because you gave away three picks to get him. A sixth-round pick this year, a second and a fourth-round pick next year. If he isn't good, then you've also given away some prime spots to improve your team in the process, as we just mentioned. Number two, you don't want to be back in the same spot again next year. And that's ultimately my fear with Sam Darnold. I think he's going to be too good to get you an early first-round pick. And by early, I mean top five. So now it's just a matter of how good will he be. But if we end up in the same spot as next year, well, you could have used Teddy Bridgewater to do that. And you could have kept all those picks to help continue building your team until you do find that next franchise quarterback. So, as I said yesterday, I'm not holding my breath that Sam Darnold is going to be any better than Teddy Bridgewater. But we all have to hope that's the case. Otherwise, the Panthers are going to keep digging themselves into a bigger hole, further and further away from success. But for me, it doesn't make sense to draft another quarterback because you could have done that without giving away all the assets for Sam Darnold. I don't really care about Sam looking over his shoulder. Sam should be looking over his shoulder.
Yeah.
Sam needs the competition. Sam needs somebody pushing him. I mean, there's a part of me that, you know, the Panthers have been open about maybe helping Teddy Bridgewater get traded somewhere where he wants to go.
Mm-hmm.
there's a part of me that hopes they keep Teddy around.
Yeah.
Like, I think the competition will be good for Sam Darnold. So, it's all weird to me. Like, again, like I said yesterday, it feels like they've gone through a bunch of decisions that they didn't need to do, but since they did them, now we have to go in this direction. So it's like, you didn't have to do that, or you shouldn't have done that, but you did, so now we're here, mm-hmm. type things, right? Like, didn't have to sign Teddy Bridgewater, but you did, so now we have to hope you're good when we know you're not going to be that good enough, that good. And now we get to the place where we find out that you aren't good, and so we should just continue on the process, but you go get another quarterback anyway, so now that you've done that, now we have to do this. Like, it's just this weird, like, hole digging that's happening. So, let's just hope that Sam Darnold works out, because that would be the best case scenario for everything. It would make those picks you gave away worth it.
Yeah.
Even though he probably needs them too to help himself. All right, next up. There are NFL teams that are skipping out on voluntary workouts. And we'll put voluntary in quotations. Players from four different NFL teams have now sent notification that they won't participate in voluntary workouts, which start on Monday. And through the NFL Players Association, the Denver Broncos, the Tampa Bay Bucks, the Seattle Seahawks, and now today the Detroit Lions have joined in on this. And they have announced their intention to not participate due to the ongoing pandemic, of course. And in the Broncos' case, they have seen rising COVID cases in their area. And the Players Association is also citing lack of protocols that are in place by the NFL right now for these workouts. So guys don't feel safe, necessarily, going to the facility, essentially. Guys have been working out at the facility, but they don't have to get tested right now. And the interesting part to me is that they have to announce their absence from voluntary workouts. Doesn't seem like a thing you should have to announce. But the problem is, and we all know, that voluntary workouts are a misnomer. Here's ESPN's Marcus Spears on the matter.
It makes sense to me. Like, look, you want a window as long as possible in order for not only vaccines, but COVID, right? To see if there is an elimination happening before you get back to full-fledged being together in the building. And look, quote unquote, voluntary in the league has always meant mandatory because it's looked upon from coaches as you not being available to your team. But the bottom line is this. As much of a window as these teams and these players can create before they all have to get back together, I think makes for a better situation when we get to the point when serious football is about to happen and still gives us potential to be further along in this process of getting vaccinated and COVID, hopefully numbers going down and getting to a point where everybody feels comfortable about being in the vicinity.
Spears is right. Unfortunately, if you don't show up to these things, it turns out as bad optics for you because it appears you are not invested in your team when we all know that that's a load of crap. And we saw that teams were able to navigate voluntary workouts virtually last year. And in some cases, players have cited that it actually upped their accountability level because they had to do so much preparation on their own. But with a league that claims to be so invested in the health and safety of its players, of its product, why isn't the NFL announcing to the players that these workouts will be strictly voluntary, or will be strictly virtual, rather? Now, there are some guys with workout bonuses, but I would argue that they should get those even in a virtual capacity. And we all know we're not out of the doghouse with this pandemic right now, and anything that is unnecessary should be virtual or eliminated. And these guys are pros, and they know that if they ain't ready to go in August, they'll be chopped liver. And I understand you do have to get to a point where you have to get guys practicing together, but it's April, right? It's going to be okay.
Yeah.
So why isn't the NFL telling them? Like, why is this a situation where the PA has to come out and say, nah, man, we ain't going? When the NFL should be like, nah, you guys aren't going. Stay home. Do it virtually.
Yeah.
Come on, man.
I'm with you.
All right, lots to get to as it pertains to the NFL draft and the Panthers' plan. And with that, we welcome in Ryan Wilson from CBSSports.com. Ryan, it's good to talk to you as always, my man. I'll get to some of these voluntary, involuntary workouts from NFL teams in a little bit. But first and foremost, I want to congratulate you on being the first person who I've seen to put out a mock draft where the Panthers are trading back in the draft, which to me seems like it makes more sense than anything else I've seen from a mock draft analyst so far. So congratulations.
I'll take it. I've been taking a lot of heat on these mock drafts, so I'll take any positive press I can get. But I think you're right. I mean, you hear people in the media say in recent days that's the Sam Darnold trade happened from the Jets to the Panthers, that maybe the Panthers are still going to be in the mix for a quarterback. What I took from the Sam Darnold move was that Panthers, me just speculating here, probably like Mac Jones. And if the feeling is that Mac Jones is going number three overall, they decided to go in a different direction with their quarterback search. So if Mac Jones is three and they like Mac Jones, and we all know that Matt Rhule and that coaching staff was the coaching staff of the Senior Bowl, where they saw Mac Jones up close and personal, and they don't prefer they prefer Mac Jones over whoever happens to be left at the quarterback position, then yeah, go get Sam Darnold. And if that's the case, there will be plenty of Sooners interested in trading up, I would imagine, especially at eight. Eight feels like a sweet spot, and if you're able to trade down, stockpile some picks, and you have Sam Darnold and you're happy and going in that direction, then that seems to make the most sense. If you, in fact, were going to draft a quarterback even after drafting Sam, or trade for Sam Darnold, my question would be, is Sam Darnold such a huge upgrade over Teddy Bridgewater that you need to do those moves in order to get another quarterback? And I don't think the answer is yes, it is. We haven't seen that yet in New York. I think coming to Carolina is a great move for his career. We'll see how it plays out. But it does seem to me to indicate that the Panthers are either not drafting a quarterback and moving down or staying put and addressing another need.
Yeah, I tend to believe that the Panthers, because even Scott Fitterer has said, the new Panthers GM, has said that drafting a quarterback is not off the board for them. And, you know, I tend to believe that they're just putting that out there to entice teams like you have in your mock draft, Washington, to trade up to number eight. But sometimes the more and more I hear about this possibility, the more I believe it to be true. But my question then would be, you know, if you were so worried about it, then you could have sucked without trading the assets away for Sam Darnold and used all those picks for the new quarterback that you're drafting this year. And so that's why I don't believe they're going to take a quarterback in the draft, because they did give up things to get Sam Darnold, things that aren't necessarily insignificant. So I think it's interesting. But my question regarding all of this is, do you see a clear plan from the Panthers? I mean, even dating back to last year with Teddy, when they essentially gave up on him 1 year later for a guy who may not be any better, as you just mentioned.
Well, it feels like David Tepper, the owner, is being very aggressive about trying to upgrade the entire team. And Teddy Bridgewater, when he was signed, we sort of understood in a three-year deal that it was sort of a year-to-year thing. And I thought that Teddy did a great job in the 1 year he had there. It was Joe Brady's first year, and we saw some really good things. And Matt Rhule, you get the sense that people are buying into what he's selling in terms of that locker room. And I think at one point they were 3-3, and that was pretty exciting because everyone thought this might be one of the worst teams in the NFL. And they stumbled a little bit down the stretch, but that was to be expected. Incredibly young defense. I think they're going to be better there. I think the offense is coming together, and Joe Brady, given what he did there and what he did the year before, you feel good about that. I think you're definitely going in the right direction. Now, that division is incredibly tough. The defending Super Bowl champs, we'll see what happens with Jameis Winston in New Orleans in terms of how good that team can be there. The Falcons have some questions at four. It looks like that maybe they're not drafting the quarterback. We'll see for sure. But there's certainly a chance to be competitive, but I think it's Carolina is going in the right direction. And one other thing, David Tepper doesn't strike me as a man who has a ton of patience. So he's going to want to get this thing fixed. but he feels like he wants to do it the right way. And you can certainly take issue with the way things ended with Ron Rivera, and that's fair. But this doesn't feel like to me like a Jimmy Haslam in Cleveland situation where he's just every 15 minutes changing his mind based on whoever he spoke to last. This feels like there is a plan in place. But the other thing, Al, it's hard to win the NFL. Even if everything aligns perfectly, sometimes you just don't have the players. The players are injured. You make the wrong call. And at a decisive moment, it costs you a game. But in terms of like stacking the teams, those that I'm really worried about, the Panthers aren't anywhere on that list.
Ryan Wilson from CBSSports.com joining us here. All right, so you do have the Panthers making a trade with the Washington football team, trading back to the 19th pick to take defensive back Greg Newsom II out of Northwestern. What do we know about this defensive back, and why does that make sense to you?
Well, the Panthers need help in the secondary. I mean, that's not a surprise. If you trade down, if you're at 8, you could take Pat Surtain there, the cornerback out of Alabama. That's right around the range. He'll probably go 9 or 10 feels like more likely. But if you trade back and get a player that is incredibly good and not that much different in terms of grade-wise than the top cornerbacks in this draft, then why not? You might as well draft picks in the process. So great player in Northwestern, played at an extremely high level, played a lot of quarters covered. But he's physical at the catch point, makes plays on the ball, long, all the things you look for when you're checking the boxes for quarterbacks who can compete against these huge wide receivers in the NFL and in the NFL South especially. He had a fantastic pro day, and, you know, sometimes he put too much stock in his pro day, but he ran in 4.3s. And sometimes these guys run fast, and you watch him play, you're like, well, that guy clearly isn't that fast. Greg Newsom played at that speed. So I think you get him at the bottom of the first round if he's there at 19. That's a fantastic get with the extra draft picks. And then in round two, I had the Panthers taking Jalen Mayfield, the right tackle out of Michigan, who could kick inside if you need him to. But, you know, you might as well bolster the offensive line if you're rolling with a new quarterback in Sam Darnold. And obviously offensive line is a need as well for the Panthers.
Ryan Wilson covers the NFL and the NFL draft for CBSSports.com. Follow him on Twitter at RyanWilsonCBS. The Panthers went strictly defensive last year in their draft. Should that at all play into how they draft this year?
Should they still go defensive, or should they mix it up?
I mean, should they mix it up? I mean, does it matter that they took 7 defensive players last year, and so maybe they should look more offensive this year, or does that matter at all?
Right, yeah. Well, I mean, a lot of those guys they drafted contributed, so that's important. And it's a young football team on that side of the field as well. So you're making strides there. But I think what has to happen, if you're sitting there at 8 and Kyle Pitts is there, guess what you're doing? You're taking Kyle Pitts because Kyle Pitts is amazing. So, I mean, they need a tight end. Kyle Pitts plays, quote-unquote, tight end. You could pretty much line him. You can line him as an edge rusher, and he'd probably be successful. So I think you're going to, you know, draft your board, and you find the players that fit what you want to do. You don't reach for players, whatever side of the ball it is. I mean, we talked about offensive line. They need help there, both outside and inside, the tight end position. Even wide receiver, I'm not saying you take Jamar Chase at 8. They have a little more depth there, clearly, but you could add an extra wide receiver if you wanted to in the later rounds. So I don't think defense is necessarily the – you can go away from the defense, I guess is what I'm saying, based on what happened last year. But if there's a defense guy that you love – in this case, for me, is Greg Newsom at the bottom of round 1 with the trade down. That also feels like a guy you take that makes your team better in a division where guys are winging the ball over the yard, and you have to cover the Mike Evanses of the world and Julio Joneses of the world. So that also makes sense, too. So I think it's just going to be, all right, who's here when we pick? Who do we love? What position do they play? Okay, offense, fine. Okay, defense, fine. Our team is now better than it was 5 minutes ago.
Yeah, I mean, it does seem like it's best player for that pick, regardless of what side of the ball they play on. Ryan Wilson joining us. All right, last thing for you. Second pro day for Justin Fields today, and you have him going to the Atlanta Falcons with the 4th pick in the draft. What's a second pro day do for him?
I don't know. I know that His quarterback coach, John Beck, said that some teams said they want to see him make certain throws. And that's sort of what happened with Mac Jones, the second pro day, which is part of a larger pro day for all the Alabama players, that he did some things that maybe NFL teams hadn't seen him do during the season. I get it. Justin Fields is a really good football player, and I appreciate that he's doing the second pro day, and I appreciate that the 49ers are going to be there along with other teams to see him throw. But I think at this point in the process, NFL teams know what they're doing. Justin Fields could very easily be the third overall pick. It's unclear because no one's talking, as typically happens this time of year. But I don't know if he has anything to prove. I think much of the stuff we hear is media generated, and it's probably a circumstance where we spend too much time on Twitter. And I say this all the time, Alec. If the draft were held February 15th, we wouldn't have time to be making up excuses for why this player isn't good or why that player isn't good. I think Justin Fields is a special player. If he had come back to Ohio State, a year from now, we'd be talking about him the exact same way we talk about Trevor Lawrence, and that we're not talking about him at all because he's that good. Justin Fields played a year and a half, basically, and he's not perfect, but none of these guys are. I think he has a chance to be a really, really good player. So hopefully he lights it on fire his pro day today, and then, you know, he'll go top 10 where he should go, and then we can move on to talking about other stuff that doesn't involve wondering whether a 22-year-old kid is a good football player or not.
Yeah, first of all, we all spend way too much time on Twitter and every social media platform for that matter, so you're right about that. Secondly, why don't they just go watch, I don't know, all of the tape that is out there on Justin Fields? Wouldn't that be helpful?
Yeah, here's the thing, man. Like, so you go watch Justin Fields, and people will always point to the Indiana game last year where he threw three picks, and the Northwestern game where Greg Newsom played the first half of that game before he left, and he made some mistakes. But here's what people don't talk about. The first three games of the season, Justin Fields had 11 incompletions and 11 touchdowns. That seems pretty good to me. And every other throw he made virtually was out of this world, take your breath away. We know about the athleticism and all of that, but I just think that we run out of things to talk about. And I had a scout tell me once a few years ago when I was asking about a player late in the process. I said, so what don't you like about him? And he said, Ryan, you know what? There doesn't have to be things wrong with players. Some players can be really good. And Justin Fields and Trevor Lawrence, Zach Wilson, Mac Jones, Trey Lance, those guys are really good. It's just that fans, you know, dig their heels in and can't see outside the tunnel vision, and they get super angry when things don't go their way. So we'll find out in 2 weeks, Alec, exactly how this thing unfolds and who's angry and who isn't.
Ryan Wilson covers the NFL and the NFL draft for CBSSports.com. Follow him on Twitter, and don't spend too much time there, at Ryan Wilson CBS. Thanks so much, man. We always appreciate you. We'll talk to you soon.
Thank you, Alec.
Couple of issues in the NBA right now. The first one that I want to get to is the NBA play-in tournament. And for those people who don't know about the NBA play-in tournament, the NBA instituted this for the final two spots in the playoffs for each conference. So essentially, the seventh and eighth place teams play each other. The winner earns the seventh seed. The ninth and tenth place teams also play each other. The loser gets eliminated from playoff contention. And then the loser of the 7-8 game and the winner of the 9-10 game play, and you get your eighth playoff seed. So that's how this works. Luka Doncic, not a fan of the playoff game. Here was Luka a couple of nights ago.
Obviously, we're trying to get a sixth seed. I don't understand the idea of playoff playing. You play 72 games to get in the playoffs, and then maybe you lose two in a row and you're out of the playoffs. So I don't see the point of that. But we're just trying here to get to the sixth spot, and I think that's our goal right now.
Okay.
Maybe even more than sixth spot.
So on one front, I agree with him. His owner, Mark Cuban of the Dallas Mavericks, has sort of backed him up on this idea and said it's not good. But I want to hear from my friend, Brendan Whitted from the That's Blackmail podcast, HUCosell.com, League Pass Lair as well. And we welcome him in right now. Brendan, does Luka have a point?
I think he definitely has a point. And they instituted this last season, right? Like, because they had to stop the season short because of COVID. And part of what they did was they brought every team, I think it was within six games, might have been eight, but within 6 to 8 games of the eighth seed, they brought them into the bubble because they felt, and understandably so, that it was unfair if different teams had played different amounts and no one knew that it was going to get stopped prematurely. This year, everyone knew it was going to be 72 games. They had, like, they trudged forward even and potentially at some times when they shouldn't have, and everybody's going to have the same shot. Well, if we have 72 games, wherever you're at the end of 72 is where you're at, mm-hmm. and that's who you are. And so it made more sense last year, but I think that the NBA understood how thrilling it was, like watching the Suns and the Trailblazers, like, and Grizzlies and Pelicans, like, go all out to win these what ended up being eight regular season games in the bubble to try to jostle and get to that seventh or eighth spot. It was exhilarating. It was exciting. And I think that the NBA wanted to recreate that, which is understandable because that was a really fun time. I enjoyed that part of it pretty much as any of the regular playoffs. But this does feel really unfair. And keep in mind that if it's based on win percentages, right? So if you're the ninth or 10th, but you're several games behind the seventh and eighth seed, you still have an opportunity to make the playoffs. That feels unfair. And I think Luka's absolutely right.
Yeah, I mean, I don't like the idea that if you are the seventh seed at the end of the season, that you can get knocked out immediately in just two games. But then at the same point, maybe it's just incumbent upon them now to readjust their thinking that 7-8 really isn't a playoff team. If you want to be a playoff team, you have to be the sixth best team in the conference. And, you know, at the end of the day, we're talking about 7-10 seeds. How much difference is there between a 7 and a 10 seed?
I think I'm looking at the percentages now, right? So the seventh seed in the West right now is Dallas, and the 10th is Golden State. So Dallas is thought to be, like, while not a title contending team, it's still a very, very good team. Golden State is, you know, kind of barely hanging on. You see Steph, he went for 50 plus the other night, but for the most part, they've been a disappointment because of the injuries and Steph just not having enough around him. The difference between Dallas, I think of Dallas as a playoff team. Golden State, I do not. And it really is kind of that simple for me because it doesn't feel like Golden State, if the playoffs started today, it doesn't feel like Golden State would have earned its way into any sort of postseason conversation. They would be, hey, they weren't good enough this year, largely because Klay Thompson got injured. Cool. Wiseman has been out. Draymond has missed some time as well. Cool. Then go and prepare for next year. They really shouldn't, in my mind, they're not a playoff caliber team. That's the difference. The difference is Dallas is a legitimate squad that, while I don't believe they'll make it past the first round, deserve the right of a postseason. Golden State, in my mind, does not.
Okay. I mean, I can get with all of that. Let me just bring you this one last quote, though, from Luka that in some ways rubs me the wrong way, but also I kind of understand where he's coming from. He said, "The worst part of this approach is that it doubles the stress of the compressed schedule. Rather than playing for a playoff spot and being able to rest players as the standings become clear, teams have to approach every game as a playoff game to either get into or stay in the top six, since there are consequences. So players are playing more games and more minutes and fewer days." Now, I understand, especially in a condensed schedule season, that playing more games in more minutes in fewer days is probably not what you want to do because it, you know, increases the risk for injury and you want to have your best players ready to go for the playoffs. But at the same time, like, I kind of want the players playing every game like a playoff game because that's more fun for me as the viewer.
I think you summarized it perfectly. Like, for Luka, yes, they're going to want more rest. Like, that makes a ton of sense. But from the NBA's point of view, teams taking their foot off the gas, like for instance, Oklahoma City, right? They have decided to stop playing Al Horford, even though he's obviously the best option at center for them. Why? Because they know that they're tanking and they're trying to get a better draft position. Tanking and teams intentionally trying to play poorly, and by teams I mean management, not the players themselves. But them intentionally trying to play poorly is really a really bad mark on the NBA that they really can't get rid of unless they fundamentally change the way that they do the draft. And so it incentivizes teams to keep pushing. Right. And so, yes, from the NBA's point of view, that's perfect. That alleviates a particular thorn in their side. But for players, as you mentioned, it's been a compressed season already. We've seen a lot of really talented players go down. And while there haven't been more injuries, according to the people that kind of follow this stuff, than in a normal season, like, you know, per game or anything like that, it's the people that have gone down. It's AD, it's LeBron, it's KD, it's Embiid, and most recently Jamal Murray. Like, that stuff, like, you want more, like, from the player's point of view, I can understand being like, we need more rest because we're trying to finish out strong and trying to be healthy moving into the postseason.
Yeah, it's for me, I'm like, sorry, Luka, that you have to keep playing hard at the end of the season. Like, what are we talking about here? He's like, oh, man, I got to go to work and work hard today, and I really don't want to do that.
Do you want to be at work? Always want to be at work, yeah. Alex.
No, I don't. I don't. And you know, and so that's why I said there's part of it that I understand. But, you know, it's kind of like a hard thing to complain about. All right, you mentioned Jamal Murray. What is the impact of Jamal Murray, his injury on Denver's, I mean, let's just call it postseason run, because they're a good team and they probably do have more of a chance to make a big run.
Their title hopes are done. And I can't say it any more clearly than that. I've loved watching this Nuggets team. They're after they pick up Aaron Gordon in that trade, they were the best team in the NBA to me, just because of the way that they were able to play off of Jokic and the net rating and everything like that suggests that that is absolutely the case. Jamal Murray is, first off, a lot of people kind of got to know Murray in the bubble last year with those 50-point performances and just those hellacious offensive runs that he went on versus Donovan Mitchell and then later against the Lakers. It's incredibly unfortunate because he was having the kind of backup season to that you want to see. Like, you saw him get better and show and prove in the postseason last year. And then this year, it's continued. He's over 20 points a game. He's shooting incredibly efficiently, getting to the line 7 to 8 times. Like, he is the perfect complement to Jokic, who's a center that needs the ball in his hands a lot. And not a lot of guards want the ball to not be in their hands. Murray is as capable on the ball as off the ball, and he was the perfect guard for Jokic to play alongside. The other part is, I mentioned the Aaron Gordon pickup. So what they had to do in addition to draft picks was to trade RJ Hampton and Gary Harris, two of their backcourt guys. So they were already a little thin once they made the trade to get Gordon. It was worth it. They've been a much better team. But now they're really bereft of any sort of backcourt talent. So guys that would have helped with Hampton and Harris are now gone. And so now they're going to have to rely on Monty Morris, who was a good backup point guard, but there is a decided drop-off between Murray and Morris. And then they're going to have to rely, in terms of their secondary unit, on Campazzo kind of running the show. And so it's just sucks for them because they were so good. And it hurts them defensively specifically because – it's not like Murray is a great defender, but in those Jokic minutes without Murray, defensively they take several steps back, and I think that's what's ultimately going to kill them. They were already a little thin before this injury, but getting hit in the backcourt specifically is absolutely going to annihilate them.
Brendan Whitted, League Pass Lair, and HUCosell.com, That's Black Mail Podcast, joining us. All right, last thing for you real quick. Because the University of North Carolina suddenly has a new head coach in Hubert Davis, and they got a bunch of big men who have defected in one way or another, whether that is through the transfer portal or entering the NBA draft, or you know, Armando Bacot, who is testing NBA waters. What do you make of what you've seen at North Carolina here in the early days of Hubert Davis's tenure, and can we assume that Armando Bacot will come back?
I was a little surprised to see Bacot test the waters, but I mean, again, because they changed the rules on draft eligibility and stuff, you can stay in a little bit longer and get more information, which makes a lot of sense. Just, you can get honest sort of feedback from the people that are ultimately going to be making the decisions about who to pick. But with Kessler leaving, we pretty much all knew that Sharp was going to go, and Brooks leaving as well. It's obviously that's a complete change up from last year, because they were big heavy in terms of that was where the majority of their talent was lying. But I mean, this is kind of what happens in college. And so it's tough, because this sort of turnover before Hubert Davis became the head coach was going to be something that they were going to have to overcome. Now this has got to be number one on his list, trying to figure out where in the transfer portal they can go grab somebody. And that's kind of particularly what this season is going to be, given the fact that the NCAA has allowed guys to transfer without having to sit out a year. I like player autonomy. I don't have a problem with it. If coaches are able to move at their free will, I believe players should as well. Kessler is moving to he's decided to go to Auburn. He's going to a place where he feels that he's going to get more time or more shine or do what's best for him. And ultimately, for a lot of us that go to college, you're trying to do what is best for your professional career moving forward. That's what he's doing. Hubert Davis got a big job on his hands, but it was always going, like, you know what it is. You see him as basketball coach, bro. You know what it is. You know what it was. Get to work.
Brendan Witt at League Pass Lair. That's Blackmail Podcast. Follow him on Twitter at HUCosell. Check him out at HUCosell.com. Brendan, thanks as always, man. I appreciate you.
I wanted to drop this. I completely forgot. I'm going to be speaking at the Basketball Analytics Summit that Dr. Stroman put on. You mentioned UNC. She's been working over there. It's a great opportunity to kind of learn more about basketball. Kurt Goldsberry will be there. Dean Oliver, kind of the godfather of analytics. Ken Pomeroy, the guru of college basketball. All those guys will be speaking. I'll be on the panel. So if you can, go to Basketball Analytics Summit, the way the words sound, Basketball Analytics Summit, come check your boy out.
Basketball Analytics Summit. Check it out. Go see Brendan Witted there on the panel. Thanks, man, as always. We appreciate you.
Appreciate it, man.
So you've got a couple of people in weird positions, but that doesn't change our weekly lineup of guests. You can put that on the board, Dennis. And that includes Chip Patterson from CBSSports.com at Chip_Patterson on Twitter, who joins us each and every Wednesday and is one of my favorite people in the entire world. And I know he's one of Adam's favorite people in the entire world as well. Chip, how you doing, my man?
Man, I'm doing good. I got a smile as big as Adam's when I come on for 1 o'clock on Wednesday.
I love it. I love it. You know, the thing about today, though, is, Chip, that I feel like there is a lot of, like, transfer / NIL / like legislative topics to get to. I'm not sure they're the most fun topics to get to, but I also think that they are, like, progressive things that I'm happy are happening, including, you know, something that you've written about and just me perusing CBSSports.com about the American Athletic Conference dropping interconference transfer penalties. And there have been a couple others who have done that as well. Why has it taken us so long to get to some of these rules?
Well, I think that the anticipation of changes at the NCAA level, which are going to be happening in the next week, potentially even, and a lot of reporting is just indicating that the NCAA is going to institute the one-time transfer rule, mm-hmm. which would allow any student athlete to be able to move to another university and, you know, do it without penalty, without having to sit out the year or the academic year in residence, as they've called it before. And so, you know, with the way the waiver process has played out over the last several years, and I'll say like maybe even the last half decade, that has really put us in a place where I think that no conference wants to stand in the way. Now, there's a few conferences that are still holding out on those existing penalties of moving from one school in a conference to another school in the conference. But already we've seen the ACC, they got out in front of this, the MAC, and now the American Athletic Conference. What they're basically doing is they're just saying, all right, we're taking our hands off of transfers. You know, we're out of the business of legislating what needs to happen. And ultimately where I come back on the discussion, yes, I think it is valuable to point out that coaches can move even within the same conference without any kind of penalty. Look at Chris Beard, who just left Texas Tech to take the job at Texas. He doesn't have to sit out a year in residence to be able to get acclimated to his new surroundings. Why should the players? But I even just look at the entire college sports landscape, because these penalties for transfers, sitting out a year, whether it be anywhere at any conference or even within the same conference, it's only applied to a handful of sports, like literally right. five sports. And so if we're not going to like what makes if we're really going to do the song and dance about the real reason college athletics is special, then don't take the revenue sports and hold them by different standards. So I think that bringing everybody to the same page is something that makes the most sense to me. Again, we don't even have to look at how coaches are able to move about without penalty. We just have to look at even other NCAA sports to see that a player can leave one team and go to another one, even in the same conference, without ever having to sit out. And so the one-time transfer rule, getting rid of these additional penalties for intra-conference transfers, I think it's taking the revenue sports that we spend so much of our time talking about, and it's actually putting it on a more level playing field than the rest of college athletics.
Chip Patterson from CBSSports.com joining us here on the Adam Gold Show. Do these things ultimately make college sports better?
Yes.
In terms of, like, I guess I'm looking at it more. I mean, I'm all for, like, player autonomy, of course. Like, I want them to be able to basically do whatever they want. You know, same for coaches. I don't think there should be really any standard. But what about from a competition standpoint?
So, from a competition standpoint, it absolutely makes college sports better because you're able to go and find a spot that is going to be a good fit. You're able to find a spot where you're going to be able to see action. You're going to be able to have the chances that you might not have had coming out of high school based on the way that you've performed. I think all of that is good. I think it makes teams better. I think it gives players more opportunity. And in the limited time that most athletes have in college sports, like, you should be able to maximize it, whether that be playing time, whether that be like an opportunity to be closer to home or an opportunity to link up with somebody that you are high school friends with or at the basketball level, AAU teammates with, or 7-on-7 at the football level. But I will say this, and I've come around on this as a little bit of balance, because I'm with you in terms of cheering on the players being able to get this more power and more opportunity. I do think that in college basketball specifically, not for competitiveness, because for competitiveness it does make it better, I think that as a product to sell, I think it hurts college basketball. And it's, you know, everyone's been bagging on Dickie V about how he's like, this is the worst for college basketball. And I think that that's where I have to say college basketball as a product to sell helps when you've got somebody at the same school for 3 years. Mm-hmm. It helps because you're able to have recognizable names. Most of the people in our area, they love their team. And they might know what's going on at a few other ACC schools or a few other conference rivals, but they don't really care about anybody else. And the basketball heads and the hoops heads, they're going to be all in watching college basketball no matter what. But what about the basics? What about the normies? What about the people who aren't necessarily attracted to college basketball? They're going to find it harder to dial in. They're going to find it harder to keep up if the rosters are changing every year. So better for competitiveness, yes. Better for players, yes. But I will admit that in this conversation, if you are only looking at it in terms of college basketball as a product to sell, you're not going to reach any of those normal average Joe, average Jane sports fans when it's just so difficult to keep up.
Chip Patterson from CBSSports.com is joining us kind of along those lines too. Because I was reading, and I saw Mack Brown, the North Carolina head football coach, yesterday kind of diving into a lot of these topics. But I think mostly as it pertains to, like, fairness to athletes, at least as he was talking about the transfer portal. I mean, he said it's going to change college athletics. And, you know, he talked a lot about kids that don't get opportunities, kids that especially in conjunction with the extra year for this year, which might just be just this particular situation and won't necessarily affect the long term of things. But, you know, I think we see a lot of, like, the big name players that enter the transfer portal and they get picked up right away. How many other kids don't enjoy the same success through the transfer portal, you know, as opposed to the ones that do, I guess?
It's tough because you're doing the scholarship question, right? The idea that if I enter the transfer portal, which, remember, and of note, everyone needs to remember, just because you enter the portal doesn't mean that you can't go back.
Right.
Now, if the coaching staff decides to pull your scholarship, then that's different. But if the coaching staff is going to support you and say, yeah, if you want to go out there, that's fine. We're going to have a place for you if you would like to return. But this is something that we're going to allow you to do. So it doesn't necessarily mean you're leaving, but there is a value to that idea that if everybody goes to hit the free agency market, so to speak, and then all of a sudden the game of musical chairs, music stops and there's not a spot for you, you're running back basically something that has happened in recruiting for a long time. You're bringing back some of those same sweats about scholarship counts, who's given me an offer, who's got interest, how serious is that, know, that is something that I think these players, if they went through the recruiting process at any kind of even mid-major level, they've been through it before, but that doesn't mean it's not something that's concerning. But I would say that even outside of the high-profile players, like our national champion Baylor Bears had three of the top seven, I think maybe four of the top seven rotation players were started their career somewhere else. You know, Davion Mitchell, one of the real stars of the Baylor's NCAA tournament run, he started his career at Auburn. Couldn't get on the floor, ends up transferring to Baylor. Maceo Teague, another one of the sort of three-headed monster, along with Jared Butler and Mitchell. Maceo Teague, he started his career at UNC Asheville. The Baylor team is an example of the way that even if you're not a high-profile name in the transfer portal, there is an opportunity for you to land at somewhere that might be a better fit with the coaching staff, it might be a better fit with the team, and you can accomplish the highest goals in the sport like a Davion Mitchell, like a Maceo Teague did in winning the national championship.
All right, so with Mack Brown talking about, you know, the transfer portal going to change college athletics, is this just a college football coach being upset that his job becomes a little bit more difficult, or does he have valid excuses?
I think that he's great with words, and when you and the way that he says these things, he says it's going to change college athletics. You're right. It is going to change college athletics. It changes the entire mental approach of not just for coaches, but for players. And to say that it's going to change doesn't necessarily mean that it's going to be bad. One of my great arguments against a lot of the doomsday messaging that has come from those who say more player movement, free agency, the transfer portal, this is going to ruin college sports. And I say maybe it will, but I know the existing system is unfair to a lot of these players. And there's too many stories where you just end up in a bad situation and you can't get out of it and you miss out on opportunities. And before you know it, you're 23, 24 years old. And that prime time, I mean, like, most people, not to crib the NCAA's commercials that they run during the NCAA tournament, but like most of these athletes aren't going to be going and making millions of dollars, and trying to have the most enjoyable experience possible is so important. And so I think that when Mack Brown says it's going to change college sports, he's right. It's just that there is a very strong argument that it's going to be changed for the better for the players.
All right, and one last thing, just as it pertains to Mack Brown and some of his comments recently, the extra year of eligibility, which he said that was a good idea at the time, but now it's going to have some ripple effects, mostly including the class of 2022, who, right, you know, may not get a scholarship when they deserved one, or, you know, may have scholarships revoked or whatever. I mean, what kind of impact is that going to happen? Is the extra year of eligibility going to have on future classes?
There's a trickle-down effect right now. We saw in this last recruiting class, the class of 2021, a lot of coaches did not offer all of the scholarships they had available. You know, they have super seniors coming back. And we also heard from coaches who said, you know, we didn't get to get these guys on campus because of the recruiting dead period, which, by the way, should be ending June 1. He said, we didn't get to get these guys in camp. We didn't get to evaluate them, measure them ourselves. And many of the high school players did not even have a season. I mean, remember, Virginia not having high school football this fall contributed to the decision that brought Tony Grimes on campus almost a full year, well, really 6 months. He would have been an early enrollee, but it's what got Tony Grimes to be able to be playing for North Carolina this fall, because he was not going to have the option to play Virginia high school football. And these coaches are saying, I would rather take a transfer than a high school player I haven't seen, or a high school player I don't know about. And so as these scholarship numbers are continuing to get tweaked a little bit, as the super senior extra year of eligibility continues to give some of these players more time where they could transfer out, where they could get that immediate eligibility, college football coaches are making tough decisions, and we are seeing less scholarship offers directly to right out of high school recruits just so that coaches can save those spots on the roster potentially for transfers. So there is without a doubt a trickle-down effect. The way that I've been looking at it after talking to some of the experts in the recruiting industry is that it's going to be a zoo until the class of 2023. And then once we get another year behind our belt, then the recruiting calendar will level out just a little bit.
Right.
The scholarship counts will level out just a little bit. But without a doubt, it's like guys who might be power five are now going to end up going to group of five. Guys that are group of five might now end up going to junior college. Like there is without a doubt, or FCS level, there's without a doubt a trickle down where less high school players are getting offers because of the uncertainty of high school prospects, the super senior eligibility, and how widespread things are in the transfer portal.
You've been listening to the Best of the Adam Gold Show podcast, part of the Capital Broadcasting Podcast Network. Don't forget, this podcast drops every weekday at 3 p.m. And you can find it at WRALSportsFan.com, the WRAL SportsFan app. Or you can subscribe for free at the iTunes and Google Play stores.